And with a rousing trumpet horn intro, we're now beginning our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. This is WHFR Dearborn, and the new WHFR Journal is coming right up. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is Jay Koronick with you. Happy to be with you today. It is winter wonderland. Yes, it's a great time out there. It is time, in fact, for us to recognize that snow has fallen. Be careful. We have some winter driving tips coming up later in the hour, and that's always an exciting thing. This time of year, sometimes it's the first time you've seen snow for a long time, so you sort of forget what you're doing out there. And obviously, you have to drive a little more cautiously, but there's some tips from the AAA that were in the papers this week. So, well, we are local news and alternative views based on the Dearborn Times-Herald and Dearborn Press and Guide newspapers, with opinions from yours truly, Jay Koronick, and also in the studio today with me is our WHFR News Director, Amy Powers. Welcome today. Hey, Amy.
Well, hello there. Good afternoon.
Any trouble on the roads?
No, you just have to drive a little slower. I mean, you know, yeah. It's common sense stuff out there.
Yeah, it takes you a little bit longer to physically, in terms of distance, to stop if you have to. And when the roads are a little bit slick, either just wet or snowy, icy. And so you need to allow a little more distance between your car and the car in front of you. Even if you're late for something, being 3 feet closer
right.
might mean that you're smashed into them, and you're not going to get there faster if you're smashed into the car in front of you. So that's a good basic rule, but some people forget that. So we're going to proceed with the news as soon as Amy gives me my news
list. Oh, sorry, this list, yeah.
Yes, it's...
I thought you had it off the top of your head.
No, it's all organized somewhere here, but I wrote it down, actually. Just sort of a recap, and we're not going to go too long here, but the Dearborn Press and Guide last Sunday did report that the city of Dearborn, the city council, did look into and hear testimony from pit bull lovers, dog lovers, about about maybe banning pit bulls. Some people say, well, since somebody gets bitten by a pit bull every year or so, this happened in this ordinance, or considering the ordinance to ban the pit bull breed as able to be owned at all in the city, came up in Allen Park and Lincoln Park in the last 2 years. And here in Dearborn, I think they were responding to a pit bull attack that happened in Dearborn Heights. It was actually, I think, a 10-year-old girl about 8 months ago, something like that.
Yeah, 10-year-old girl in Dearborn Heights.
Right. She got attacked by a pit bull, and then a 75-year-old neighbor gentleman came by to pull the dog off of her, and both of them needed, I think,
multiple stitches,
10
14 stitches
15, for each of them. And so that was a bloody affair. We're not using the British meaning of the word bloody there, but literally unfortunate. And so what the city of Dearborn did, and it seems kind of appropriate to me, because it is just completely unfair to discriminate against breeds. I mean, not all pit bulls are vicious, but boy, when they are, they know how to attack, I guess. So,
yeah, putting it lightly.
But any dog can be violent, either because of illness, disease, or maltreatment. And so the Dearborn city of Dearborn has passed, has strengthened, if you will, or that metaphor they used in the headline, put more teeth into their violent dog regulations.
Because I think that part of this is that when you're saying irresponsible dog owners, these were animals that were off their leashes. You know, the owners were not nearby, weren't there to contain or even call back, you know, the dog that is attacking, you know,
right.
Whomever. And so I think that's the biggest issue, is being responsible that way, having your dog, you know, mm-hmm. in a yard or in the home.
I think most neighborhoods, like my neighborhood, I know, I don't know if it's a neighborhood thing or a city thing, but if you take your dog outside, unless it's a fenced-in yard where they can't get out, they have to be on a leash.
Yeah.
And, of course, you have to pick up their bodily waste elimination,
right.
If it's solid
anyway.
It's part
of being responsible.
Yeah. And even in my neighborhood, I think cats are supposed to be on a leash, but nobody puts that.
The cats just refuse.
Yeah, cats won't let you do that. And actually, cats are, as a cat owner, cats are actually cleaner in terms of the environment. Bodily waste elimination from dogs actually is a danger to children coming into that area, even days or weeks after it's deposited there, that if they touch it and then they put their fingers, I think in their eyes, there's a good chance that they'll get an eye disease or blindness will result. So there's actually active poisons in the in the waste of most dogs these days, and maybe it's more so for dogs that are always outside, or I'm not sure. But cats, of course, they. Of course, not in the winter when the ground is frozen, but they try to dig into the soil, they do their stuff, and then they cover it up. And that somehow is cleaner or less a problem for children playing in the area. And I don't
less
know.
Less chance of the exposure to the children.
Yeah, certainly that it's less chance for exposure just because they cover up their own
But I've never seen a cat do that outside.
Oh, I have.
I haven't.
Oh, yeah? Well.
That's pretty tidy.
Some cats might be getting finicky, but
maybe they're more modest.
No, actually, one reason for that is, you know, cats as well as dogs, they mark territory.
Right.
And they do that with their number one waste elimination. And so if they're nervous or tense or new in the area, they might actually do it without cleaning up after themselves. So that's, all this heavy duty.
Then all the other cats know about it and come after them.
Right. So anyway, we have a couple different stages of enforcement for violent dog problems now. And if you are a pet owner or a dog owner, you might want to read the Press and Guide or the Times Herald about it. It's in both papers this week. Not unrealistic or unreal at all, and maybe people feel that they do have more easy recourse. If there is a violent dog problem as they perceive it, whether there's an incident or not, they should report it to the city of Dearborn, and I guess there's an animal control department in the city of Dearborn somewhere. Okay. Dearborn City Council accepts the so-called budget cut. I wrote it down wrong. I was hoping for a tax cut. No,
you're just mixing the national news.
It's a budget cut report that was... from a task force that Mayor O'Reilly appointed, which was interesting. I don't know if you recognize any of the names, Amy, but our own president, Dr. Gail Mee, was one of about 20 or 30 people.
I did see her name listed.
So we can blame her if we lose some city services. Sorry, Dr. Mee. I'm sure you didn't directly recommend that. But it looks like the general tenor is they predict that revenues over the next 5 years are only going to decline for the city. We can't have that, but, you know, it's a combination, as they say, of, like, we will have to do things to cut services. What service is more essential than others?
Right.
At this point, everything's been cut to the bone so much, you can't just say, well, everybody cut 10%. Well, you can't do that because some, like, smaller budgeted program, you cut 10%, you cut out the whole program.
Right.
So they have to look at the size and the nature or the impact of the cuts, and some of that can still be done. The task force, of course, recommended the usual things. Oh, let people retire and then don't rehire. Well, of course. Although I think they were recommending an awful lot of fire department personnel retire and not be rehired. And I know we have in the city charter recommended staffing levels, but maybe that's literally for fire persons, firefighting persons. Maybe they have other staff that they're talking about. So.
And I wonder as well, has the population of Dearborn decreased in the last handful of years?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that reduction, I know in charter it's based on population. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So that may be where they're coming from. It just seemed like the fire department was taking more personnel cuts, or maybe they just have more people ready to retire, I mean, at the age, and so the cut will be automatic, but of course, how do you make up for replacing those people? And again, they're probably not, if the percentage is as high as I glanced over, and I didn't have time to fully look at it. Should recommend to all of our taxpayers in Dearborn is that that report is a little bit hidden, but it is entitled, and it is on their website, cityofdearborn.org, as the article says, but it was hard to find. I put in task force report, didn't get it. So I was searching for like 5 minutes trying to find the title. It is called Vision 2016. So if you type that in, again, it's a five-year city transformation plan, but I guess they're not starting this year because they just submitted it. So 2016 is 5 years and a couple months away. So strategic recommendations for Dearborn's future, Dearborn Community Task Force. Well, I don't say task force, but that wasn't the top 12 hits for task force that I got. So take a look around. It is a separate box off the side of the homepage, but you have to know what you're looking for. This 25-page report is called Vision 2016. You can download a copy or read it from your computer at your leisure. Now, I happen to have only a black and white printer, and some of these recommendations are in colors.
Oh, I know. There's three shades of gray, so you can't make out anything.
Well, I'm looking here at four different colors. There's a dark blue for administrative efficiencies. There is a red color for personnel. There is a green color for revenue enhancement, which means how to bring money in. And a light blue, oh, I bet that's pretty, for image and development. Ooh, image and development, pretty light blue. And then you say there's shades of gray. Well, it's shades of gray.
Black and white.
In the printout, right.
In the printout.
So if you happen to have a color printer or you really want to share this with your friends the way it should be shared, having the colors that will tell you what categories these different recommendations fit into is good. Now, they're listed at the end of it, so if you only wanted to print out the numbers, but Amy and I were reading through, and some of them we just don't understand. It actually numbers 94.
Okay.
94 total recommendations. And, of course, some are, I mean, if you're going to have a list, you know, put everything in there.
Sure.
I mean, and, of course, it's interesting, the city council, of course, did accept this, but they would not even vote acceptance. They just said, okay, well, thank you. In other words, it might look like they're endorsing all these 94, and of course they wouldn't want to do that. Oh, no.
Well, some are so generalized that there's no way you could put a stamp of endorsement.
Lame duck council. Oh, it's just George Duraney, and he's the one that's going to be leaving, and David Bozzi is going to be joining. So it's pretty much the same council, but they didn't want to. I don't think we should raise taxes. Well, folks, if you look at the report, there's no way the city can get around that. And the recommendations on taxes that are in there, and I don't know if Amy wants to keep staring at that. I'm done with it. it's too depressing. It clearly shows that revenues will be in decline because of property taxes going down, because of property values going down more, and income from the state and the federal governments. You know, there's not going to be any more stimulus package money, probably, especially not with Republicans. Don't get me started on high-speed rail.
You know, you're diverting it into three different areas, and, you know, local government is not one of them.
Okay, well, you got me started on high-speed rail.
What about high-speed rail?
Okay. No, she didn't get me started, but I'm just saying, I'm just fuming about this. You know, two states, I think it's Wisconsin and Ohio, their governors, Republicans, said, we don't want any money for high-speed rail. We don't want to take any federal money that forces us for we want money for roads and highways. Now, okay, either one will create jobs, although actually highways, they already got jobs.
Short-term.
People already got jobs there, and it's very short-term, very negative planning that the railroads of the future. Now, right now, people can point out that these gas, diesel locomotives may not be as efficient as they need to be. Electric-powered trains of the future, high-speed rail is electric trains, okay? And we're not talking about Lionel O-Gauge. We're talking about
those are good.
The real fast, big ones like the 150, 200-mile high-speed rail trains that they have in France, name dropper, and China, and Shanghai, and Hong Kong, outside of Hong Kong. It's just amazing, the technology that's out there. And it would solve a lot of our transportation and congestion problems and pollution problems very quickly. I think if you build it that good and that fast and the prices are reasonable, they will come. Like in China, apparently, the pricing on high-speed rail, which is faster than taking up from the same distance, okay, is the same cost. So they think that's cost effective because you get closer into the city. You don't have the hour or two to drive to park. And right now, folks, trains don't have the hassle of check-in.
That's right.
You know, the frisking and the IDs, and who knows if that's going to go to rail or not. But so it's just a lot more convenient. Certainly here in Dearborn, if we can just get the new train station built, and if it was capable of high-speed rail, which it won't be at this point. It's another story. We have a new station. They'll have the space to add a high-speed rail, mm-hmm. which they don't have in the location right now, but they won't have money to build high-speed rail. And, of course, we said here, and it's unfortunate, we don't even have the money to have increased number of trains to run on from the new station in Dearborn to Ann Arbor, Chicago, even though, you know, we get this wonderful intermodal train station, all nice and modern, which is supposed to be completed in 2 years. But we don't have any money for staffing. And we got the extra trains, like to commute back and forth to Ann Arbor, Dearborn or something on a regular basis, or Ann Arbor, Detroit even. There is a train station in Detroit, small, not much to talk about. But can't do it because there's no more train money. We have the trains, but no more personnel to run the trains. Geez. Well, but the high-speed thing, let me get back to that. The two governors that said, no, we don't want the train money at all. We want money for roads. Well, that is just so stupid, so backwards. It's not moving us into the future, as you said. I can't believe a governor that would say that. Now, they offered some money to us originally, and they said, well, high-speed rail between, Flint and Detroit, or it didn't make. I mean, the number one place in high speed rail is that corridor from Detroit to Chicago.
Right.
And it wouldn't hurt to build a train track from Detroit to Toledo, so we can get trains to New York from Toledo quick, so we can actually be connected with the rest of the country. Right now, you have to go to Chicago and then take a train from Chicago. So that's crazy. But there aren't any tracks to Toledo anymore, I don't think, and so. That shot right there, that's going to cost a fortune to go those extra, 60 miles to Toledo
from here?
About
60 miles, yeah.
So.
But it is one of those things where, we mentioned before, where the federal government, really, this is a place for them to come in and set the framework for this type of technology throughout the country.
No matter what you feel about the size of government, our government spending, if the government sets a mandatory regulation, first of all, that doesn't cost the government anything, usually, although there's enforcement, it has to be done, so that'll cost them a little in the long run if someone doesn't follow regulations. But all around the world, all these countries where they have high-speed rail, whether it's a national plan and it's good for the future, I know China is like a totalitarian state, communist China, and it's easy for them to say, hey, we're going to go for an appropriate, less polluting, energy-efficient future. We're just going to say, you know, what the gas economy of mileage is going to be on the cars. We're just going to say, and that's it, and be done with it, what we're going to do for electric trains and producing automobiles that are all electric. We're just going to do it. We're going to mandate it, and it gets done. Now, you know, you say, well, yeah, but they don't have civil rights for their people, and blah, blah, blah. Well, there's no reason why a democracy can't have, from the top of the government, mandates to do the right thing. And I don't think it's a Republican or Democrat thing, in my naivete about government, just to have the party that's out of power being totally negative, and the party that's in power only wanting the status quo is not going to get us off the dime, is not going to save us in the future, is not going to keep us competitive, it's not going to help our educational system, and we're, you know, the decline of America, sorry Glenn Beck, is going to continue unless we get some federal planning and federal regulation here. To a certain extent, just like China has done in France and Germany and Canada to a certain extent, they also give incentive money. Now, our federal government is giving incentive money. The diesel car that I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I just bought, I'll be getting a federal tax credit of $1,800. I wish it was off the top of the car price, mm-hmm. but after I file my taxes, of course. The electric cars, like the Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Volt, I think to the same extent. I'm not sure about the rebate there, but the Leaf has got a $7,500 federal tax credit. Now, that's necessary because right now the technology is a little pricey, mm-hmm. and the car is kind of, you know, a Nissan Leaf is the size of a car that might cost $16,000 gas-powered.
Okay, so it's mid-size?
It's a small, compact.
Small, okay.
Well, compact, subcompact, whatever. It's four-seater,
okay,
four-door sedan. That's a Nissan Leaf. And a good car, good handling, all electric, 100-mile range. But the point is, people looking for that size of car, they could get it for like $10,000 less.
Right.
So you really need that $7,500 tax credit for the people that just don't have the money.
Sure, because these are running in the 30,000
right,
range.
And the Toyota Prius hybrid, which I don't think drives very well. I mean, I've read the car magazines.
I've driven
a few months ago. Yeah, but you know, they have little teeny tires that hardly have any tread on them, and they're maximized for economy.
Hmm.
And if you don't drive them too fast or try to corner too fast, they're fine. Okay, I mean, you know, people say, "Well, is it safe or not?" Well, it's safe as long as you don't try anything special. Now, I, being so old, I've had driving situations. I've driven since I was 16, so that's almost 50 years of driving. All kinds of cars, all kinds of roads, all kinds of miles. And let me tell you, when an accident, a potential accident situation comes up, I want a car that can stop faster than the others. I want a car that can swerve to the left or right without flying out of control.
Right.
I want a car that maybe does have a little more acceleration. I remember one time, thank goodness I was driving my dad's Chrysler 300 back in the 60s, which is a big V8. Even the 300 today usually has a big engine. I was approaching a traffic light in an intersection, you know, road crossing my
right.
road, and the light turned yellow. And I was too close to stop, so I decided to go on through, but there's a guy coming from my right from the other intersection. I guess he didn't see. It was a green light. His red light.
Yeah.
He wasn't slowing down. He was going like 60 miles an hour, and I don't know why. Maybe because he just turned in or something. You saw the light turn green.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to avoid that accident was for me to pedal to the metal, and I got ahead of him.
Okay.
Except when I looked in my rearview mirror, the guy that was behind me was also trying to go through the old light and smashed right into the side of it.
Right.
So, yeah. But I'm just saying that a little extra bit of performance, and because I drive a lot and I haven't taken a race car driver training class, and I really think our driver ed should include some little special skills for people to refine. But I know how to swerve, avoid. I can do some like sports car type maneuvers that the average person, they probably just panic. Okay, and panic is never good in those situations. But if you are quick enough and strong enough and you take some special driver training and you understand the principles of car maneuvers and so on, then having a car that does handle better, not just performance,
right.
Can be much safer
mm-hmm.
than the other people on the road. So I look for that. And, you know, even when I buy tires, I try to find tires that have the better traction. I'll sacrifice a couple miles per gallon for a tire that has better traction to stop me quicker,
mm-hmm.
or if I happen to be at high speeds, has less likelihood of blowing out.
Okay.
You know, at a high speed if it hits a rock or something. So it's all these stories. Back to the train situation, though. Got off the track there.
I got it.
Okay, and that is in the state of Michigan. We're talking about lame duck city council, lame duck Michigan legislature, and they've really done a bunch of terrible things, or not done anything at the legislature in this last week before they adjourned. But one of the things they didn't do was approve high speed rail funding for Michigan. The government wanted to give it to us. Okay, why? Because Wisconsin and Ohio didn't want it. And if we would have just kept our request in. In fact, the director here in Michigan worked for 8 months on the report for how we would spend high-speed rail money in Michigan. 8 months that he and his staff, I don't remember which office he was with, the state of Michigan, and he made the pitch to the legislature. Even Mike Bishop, the Republican, made a pitch for this. Yeah, the Senate leader, of course, he's lame duck. Who cares about him now, right? Why should we listen to you? You're not going to be in power next January. They made a pitch for this. It was voted down, and again, you know, that means we're not even on the table for the $1.2 billion that Wisconsin and Ohio turned down. Because the government, well, if you don't want it, let's see who does want it. We had a report ready to go. We were willing to be in the big picture to get more money than even before, not just this stupid little line that wouldn't go anywhere. And if it was Pontiac Detroit, excuse me, Pontiac and Detroit, you'd love to have that, I'm sure. But I'm just saying this major Chicago-Detroit thing, that would have been fantastic for business and transport, just like the second bridge to Canada. That didn't go anywhere either. That stayed on the table. Looks like it might be dead in the water.
Right,
or
right.
Dead over the water in January even. And so all these business-type projects, it wouldn't cost the state that much money. I don't know where legislators are in this, unless it's the usual Republican thing. We don't like anything the federal government's doing. Nah. We don't care if it's a good idea or not. Nah. Federal government's doing it, and it's Obama and, you know, Democrats. And so we don't want them to get any credit for anything so we can win the election in 2012. Yeah, but the whole country will be, and of course they want this, you know, in 2012, the whole country has even worse unemployment and fewer jobs and more people suffering. Well, normally the Democrats will be out and we'll have a Republican president because people don't think why. You know.
Or if there's just such a turn that it'll just bounce back in Obama's favor again. Just like, you know, Clinton had a chance to rebound and
right.
got another 4 years.
Well, Clinton was very good at public relations. And we have not seen a lot of Democrats are complaining, too, that Obama may be good at compromises, but the Democrats don't seem to like his compromises, like the continuation of tax cuts for the rich, but it maintains tax cuts for the middle class, too.
Right.
There's trade-offs.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think it's interesting. It seems like not to get too far off base, but that the Democrats in voting that down did so, it seems like, because they weren't part of the process that Obama had gone and sort of privately chatted with Republicans to get a compromise on the table, and that Democrats voted it down because they weren't part of that process, not because it wasn't good.
Were you listening to the radio this morning about? I don't think it's voted out yet.
Is not voted out.
A lot of the Democrats
They're
are in the majority, but again, the Republicans pretty much got a deal there to keep the rich rich, and so I think they'll get all the Republican support in the House. So all they really need is about half of the money, or half of the numbers of the Democrats in order to make it pass in the House. And then the Senate, of course, the Democrats can't get anything, even though they got 60 or 59 seats, because they're afraid of that filibuster, which is not in the Constitution, folks. Get that thing out of there. You know, the number one thing that everybody knows about democracy is you can almost never get two-thirds of the people agreeing to anything. So to have two-thirds be required to get anything out of the Senate kills the whole democratic process. Nothing can happen. Talk about gridlock. And that's just a rule that the Dems and the Republicans agreed on among themselves, is that a filibuster is possible, and you need 60 votes to end the filibuster. That's anybody that studied politics. I mean, in high school politics, you study democracies, and it's very contentious, and there's a lot of opinions, and some people are crazy, and even the ones that are for something might be crazy too. But, you know, for all kinds of different ideas, it's that marketplace of ideas. That's democracy, and we all love that and think it's wonderful, and it can be. But to get two-thirds majority for anything is almost impossible. That's why in Robert's Rules of Orders, there's only a couple places where it's mandated, and they know things like changing the Constitution and so on, or the charter of the city. Although in Dearborn, you can change the charter by simple majority vote in election once it's proposed by the Charter Commission or whatever. So there's a couple stages of getting approvals before it gets to the ballot. But two-thirds, it can't function. Whether the Republicans or the Dems have it, it can't function. That's part of the reason for gridlock in the Senate at the national level. I don't think we have that rule in the state of Michigan Senate. I don't think there's such. Well, let's hope not.
Not
anyway.
Sure.
Okay. Well, so we missed out on several good opportunities there, and whether it's the so-called lame duck sessions. I mean, I would think, you know, if I couldn't come back, I would just actually vote my conscience. I'd vote for the right thing. To heck with compromise. I'd vote for what's really going to be best for everybody, whether my party would hate me in the future or not. But these politicians, they always think, well, maybe the Dems will let me run for something else. You know, maybe the Republicans will. If I vote the right way now, I won't make them mad, and I'll still have a future with this party. Wow, come on. If you've been voting against the good of the public for a long time, it should irk you enough that maybe one last vote and then get out of politics or something. One last vote or two or three
rare.
Or four in that last week, that is the way that you believe, you know, all the people could benefit the most. Well, we're talking to the converted here. That's why they're listening
exactly.
to the show. So,
They're looking toward their political future, not ours.
No, the opinions we express here on the new WHFR Journal are those of us alone here on the air, Amy and myself today, Jay Koronek, and not necessarily anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. You're always encouraged to think for yourself. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to the politicians, however you can get in touch with them. Go ahead. Tweet them. Facebook them. Whatever. Catch them at local events and ask the tough questions. And you know, make them aware of what you think and what you believe. I know we have a few questions looking at that task force report. We can't figure out what some of those proposals are.
Hey, can I mention one thing regarding that? It was. It's also, if folks want to go to downriversundaytimes.com, they can find an article, and it does mention Vision 2016 on it. So another reference if they want to go and click on that and just have a little look-see for themselves.
Let me just mention about taxes, because everybody talks about taxes in Dearborn. And they are recommending, you know, Dearborn is at, I think, something like, well, it's less than the maximum that's already been approved by the voters. A couple mills below, okay? And so they recommend going all the way up to 15 mills. Because you don't need voter approval for that. And they're going to be desperate for money, so they may have to make that small increase in the millage area. But the report even says, okay, pass a resolution to accept the statewide guidelines, which I think will allow the cities to go up to 20 mils. But don't raise it to 20. Raise it to 18.5. Excuse me there. I think I pushed the wrong button and coughed on the microphone. So they really think the millage has to go up to 18.5. That's about 4 or 5 mils more than what it is right now.
Yeah, that's it's. I think difficult for people in particularly this economic environment to hear about more tax increases as they continue to see their housing values decline, and
they're trying to, I think, just sort of really balance the budget, because as housing value declines, that millage, which is based on property value, won't bring in the same revenue.
Right.
So in a way, I don't think, and the calculation, I'm not sure, is in the report. Well, they did a bar graph or something in there.
There's several.
But I don't think that people, if the values go down, that the increased millages will generate that much more money than what we have now. I think that's the idea. So in other words, people, in terms of dollars, won't have to pay too much more than what they're paying in their property taxes right now in Dearborn and school taxes. Maybe more if their house goes up for some crazy reason in value. But they have to balance that by raising the millage with the property values going down. Oh, well. Okay. We're going to take a couple of announcements, a couple of commentaries from Jim Hightower now on the topics we've already been talking about. The first one is entitled "The Boom is Back."
Good to hear.
As I reported
last
Friday. Well, all the businesses, most of the businesses in America that are still in business have never had a larger year of profits than this year.
Great.
Not in 10 years.
Good. That'll trickle down, I'm sure.
Well, that's, Dennis and I talked about that trickle effect last Friday that we didn't see happening. And then, where are the jobs happening? And Jim Hightower talks about the redistribution of America's wealth here. I think that word is wealth. To the few. The redistribution of America's wealth to the few. So, take a look. Listen, again, profits have never been higher. Bonuses to the Wall Street people have never been higher. Of course, unemployed is going up.
Never been higher.
And jobs continue to go more overseas, as you'll hear from Jim Hightower here. So we'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal live commentary here from Henry Ford Community College after the two Hightower commentaries. So listen up here. He has some great opinions with a lot of important facts.
Excellent news, people. After 3 years of financial doldrums and depression, money is on the move again. The economy is beginning to hum, and bluebirds of happiness are twittering with delight. People are starting to shake off what happened, trilled one of those bluebirds. The mood is absolutely better, exclaimed another. There is a definite buzz on the street, chirped yet another happy songster. Of course, none of these merry optimists are talking about your street or mine. Instead, the new surge of economic exuberance is being felt exclusively by those fortunate ones on Wall Street and in the executive suites of giant corporations. For example, the big five Wall Street firms, Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and J.P. Morgan Chase, have set aside $90 billion this year to lavish huge bonuses on their big-shot bankers. $90 billion. Also, major corporations are hauling in total profits this year of $1.7 trillion, the highest level ever recorded. Ever. Thus, reports the New York Times, the moneyed elites are walking with renewed swagger and indulging themselves once again with extravagances that we commoners cannot imagine. One insurance executive, for example, has doubled her annual cosmetic surgery budget this year. Then there's the Goldman Sachs executive who celebrated Halloween with a posh party of 1,000 of his best friends in a hip Manhattan nightclub. His bash featured an open bar and a performance by hip-hop star Lil' Kim, who appeared in a black cat costume. This is Jim Hightower saying, trick or treat, y'all. As these privileged pranksters play, the majority of Americans remain mired in a miserable, jobless economy with incomes falling, the middle class sinking, and poverty rising. As one Wall Street economist starkly says, this is unlikely to change in 2011 or 2012.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
America's unemployed and downsized workers are furious that corporate profits, stock prices, and CEO pay are up while hiring and wages are held down. But wait, U.S. corporations actually are increasing their payrolls, just not in America. In a two-year period, these corporate giants hiked hiring in foreign countries by 729,000 jobs, even as they cut 500,000 jobs here. Hilton Hotels, for example, moved a U.S. call center to the Philippines, calling it a move for maximizing efficiencies, which is cold corporate jargon for chasing cheap labor. Likewise, J.P. Morgan Chase, which hauled in $25 billion from the Wall Street bailout, is moving its telephone banking business from Troy, Michigan, to the Philippines. Dell, the computer peddler, has closed its last PC factory here while creating tens of thousands of PC jobs in China. And get this, Hewlett-Packard has dumped its human resources staff in 10 states, moving the work to Panama. Hello? Human resources is the corporate division that ostensibly helps resolve worker complaints and boost employee morale. So the message here is, hey, bud, got a problem? Take it to Panama. Yet, a clueless Harvard business professor recently poo-pooed any concerns about this outflow of American jobs. When companies succeed abroad, he asserted, people at home succeed. Golly, Professor, I can hardly wait for you to enjoy the success of seeing your job offshore to some orangutans in Malaysia. This is Jim Hightower saying, bear in mind that replacing American employees with low-wage foreigners does nothing to improve products or even make them cheaper. The savings on wage costs are simply pocketed by corporate executives and Wall Street financiers. It's a massive redistribution of wealth from the many to the few. And the moneyed elites wonder why workaday Americans are furious?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Oh, we're having such fun in the studio here listening to Jim Hightower and hoping that trickle-down theory does work somehow. Of course it doesn't, but, Except for Warren Buffett. God bless him. He is one of the super rich, and he really does know how to recommend higher taxes for the rich. There's a few crazy rich people that actually believe they should pay a higher portion of the have a greater responsibility to keeping the whole country afloat. I mean, if 90% of the population, goes down. It ultimately it will hurt business. Okay.
Yes.
Even
ultimately
a lot of these companies
Common
can maybe keep they put all their factories and their employees in foreign countries and sell to the underdeveloped countries and just forget about us. But as Hightower mentioned there, even you know like Dell Computer in Austin, Texas, dropped 1,000 employees and hired 800 in the Philippines or somewhere offshore. Yeah. In order to minimize their cost, and so that this is where the jobs are going, folks. Still, they're still going offshore from all the major companies in the U.S. You know, it's just really unfortunate. Now, I have a story here, though. I do want to mention because you said, "What about the auto industry?" New York Times reported last week that, and I think I mentioned this briefly, that General Motors is hiring 1,000 new engineers. 1,000
across the country.
That's a question. In Michigan, 1,000 jobs in Michigan. This is from Wednesday, December 1st. New York Times to develop more electric and hybrid vehicles similar to the Chevy Volt. So, and of course, I think I made the joke last Friday to Dennis is, oh, they just hired back the 1,000 electric car engineers they had in '97 when their first EV1 came out. You know, if they just would have kept going, the technology would have been so good, we would have been a world power in electric cars at this point.
Bob Lutz was really against that.
I like Lutz a lot.
Yeah.
But he, he claims now that he was the one that came up with the idea of the Volt, though.
Great.
I mean, in his interviews after he's already kicked out. But he said, well, I'm most proud of the Volt, even though I think his idea of quality and performance was always sort of Corvette, Firebird, Cadillac.
Sort of
he's really, really changed the image of Cadillac, certainly, and made it into a luxury performance car now that it wasn't before. But he wanted the Volt to be all electric, even if it meant it would only go like 40 miles, and then a little dink engine to get you to go further. And what they did, because after he left, we got to have, you know, for the extra little acceleration, we have to have that gasoline engine, just like with the Prius, ready to kick in at any time. Well, now the mileage is way, way down for people that use it only in the city. The mileage is down to 45, 50 miles to a gallon, even though it's got so many more batteries in it, but the system is that they have both engines available, the electric motor from electric batteries in the car and the gasoline engine available all the time depending on the driving conditions. And just a bad choice because electric is the way of the future and the car should have been all electric for city driving. And he said even if it's only like 40 miles before the engine kicks in, within those 40 miles, most people round trip commuting 5 days a week. They don't do more than 20 miles each way, and they still got the gas engine to kick in after that. Even though the acceleration won't be very much to
talk about. It's not going to get you through that yellow light with the oncoming car.
No, but the point is that's all they need most of the time, and have really good acceleration in those 40 miles. Everything you know, the average person would need, and the mileage if that's all they use. Well, of course, it doesn't use any gasoline, so you're gonna get tremendous overall mileage from that kind of car, even if you go more than the 40 miles a couple times a week, or go a couple hundred miles on a trip somewhere on the weekend. So you have, if you remember back, Chevy, Volt, GM represented the Volt of having an equivalent of like 150 miles to a gallon, equivalent.
Okay.
Little E there. Okay, meaning that most for average use, you're never going to need the gas engine,
right?
And so that's why your overall mileage is so high, is because you're running on batteries almost all the time. No, they changed that, and so now the mileage is down to 40 miles to a gallon, or 45 in the city, and maybe I think it's 45.
To a gallon or to a charge?
No, the equivalent mileage is 45 to 50 miles to a gallon because the gas engine is always being used,
okay,
a little bit. Or a lot, depending on how much you're accelerating.
Okay.
And so that brings down the mileage equivalent tremendously. And so why would you pay $40,000 for a car, even with a $7,500 credit, that only gets that much difference? You can get a Honda Fit that'll get 41 miles to a gallon, just gas. And you don't have to worry about the range issue. And that's a very well-made car. So I think, again, Lutz, he claims he was fighting for all electric, and he didn't get that before he left. And so who knows? He was a non-believer in climate change, to his discredit.
Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about that. And he was for electric cars because it was the right thing to do. They're going to have eventually higher performance and energy efficiency, and they can be made more cheaply because you don't need all that apparatus and technology that goes into the engine compartment these days. I mean, catalytic converters, think they're cheap? You know, they got platinum in them to help purify the air because it comes out your exhaust. You don't need a catalytic converter with an electric car, of course. There's no exhaust. There's no fumes, nothing. So he knew the reality, but he still didn't believe that there was climate change caused by people. Well, that's okay. In fact, I just finished a book I recommend to our readers for Christmas giving called Jolt. Jolt, J-O-L-T. That's a beverage, isn't it? But no, or it was a
could be
heavily caffeinated beverage. But exclamation mark. It's all about the rise of the electric car and how appropriate it is. So no matter where you're coming from, whether you believe in climate change or you think the air is too polluted or not right now, electric cars, what fantastic arguments in there. Any angle you're coming from, that's the way to go for the future. I was speaking to some BMW owners, sports car people that had very expensive gas bar cars. You know, electric is the way of the future. Oh, no, it'll never be. No. Well, you haven't been keeping up with your reading. The latest electric car, concept car from Jaguar, that's in the Paris, was in the Paris Auto Show this last November. It's a supercar. Fantastic performance. They got an electric motor at each wheel. Four motors in the car, one at each wheel, so you have four-wheel drive. And it's super fast as a Ferrari or anything like that. It's not in production yet, but it easily could be. In the trunk. And remember, we had the guest here talking about Chrysler's Turbine car,
okay,
which was a failed project on this show a couple weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
And in the trunk of this new Jaguar concept car, there's two small turbines, two jet engines, very small. I mean, I'm holding my hands up here. Very small, like basketball
size.
Smaller
than a loaf of bread, okay.
Yeah, well, a double loaf of bread anyway. And they're in the trunk, and they're constantly on because they're very fuel efficient. When they're constantly on, each of them spinning at 40,000 RPM, but they don't drive the car. No, they don't drive the car. And again, the exhaust from them, totally clean, totally,
okay,
you know, everything's burned, everything's pure air. They just charge the batteries for the car. That's all. And so it gets fantastic mileage, fantastic performance. It's just these two little pocket turbines in the in the trunk that are charging the battery. So you get 800 miles, 1,000 miles. You get mileage equivalent per gallon of 150, 200 miles per gallon. Because the turbines are so efficient, as long as they never have to go below like 40,000 RPM,
okay,
after they start up and warm up. And Renault, the French car maker, it's Renault. Nissan is the same company these days, but Renault is not. They don't sell their cars in this country yet. I'm not sure if they will at some point. But they showed a concept car. Same thing. Four electric motors, one for each wheel, four-wheel drive equivalent, nice and safe, nice and fast, high-performance, sleek sports car, not quite as fast probably as the Jaguar. And in the trunk, same sort of idea, but they've got one engine that's already being made, the Vankel, the rotary engine that's in the RX-8 Mazda,
okay,
right now. Constantly spinning at 5,000 RPM, and so it burns a little more fuel than the turbine. But it's they've already got Vankel engines, you know, that the people are manufacturing. They've been making the Vankel is German guy that invented it, but it's the Japanese that developed it, as it turned out. But primarily Mazda, which is a Ford kind of participant company. Ford, are you listening? And so you put one of those in the trunk, you turn it on when you start up your car, you let it just charge the batteries. Okay, and at 5,000 RPM, very fuel efficient. They always say, well, rotary engines aren't fuel efficient. If they're constantly at 5,000 RPM, yes, they are. And you don't need much of a size. Little teeny dink one,
sure,
just to keep the battery charged up.
A jet turbo?
Well, turbo. Right. Yeah, I said supercar. So we're up there with, you know, the Jaguar cost, if they make it, is going to be up there with Ferraris, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 right now. Although,
bring that cost down a little,
well,
for the consumer.
There is small turbine manufacturing, engine manufacturing company right here in Michigan still, and our author of Chrysler's Turbine Car mentioned them, Williamson. Williamson is the company still in Michigan making small jet turbines for a variety of different purposes.
Okay.
So I don't know where Jaguar went to for their small turbines, their pocket turbines, as they call them. But that is something I wanted to mention is that, and even the author of Chrysler Turbine Car was on Craig Folly's show, and he mentioned the Jaguar, that the turbine, he didn't mention it here because the car hadn't been released yet in Paris. But that is the way of the future as a crossover. You still have a way to get the mileage until you can get fantastic batteries that, you know, don't need to worry about that. Or you get charging stations everywhere.
Right.
So you just can plug in wherever you go. Go to McDonald's and plug in. Go to, you know, shopping center and plug. Until we get more charging stations, we need the range. And this is a great combination. The Renault combination is going to be much less expensive. Could probably be done for $40,000, $50,000. And the Volt could have been better. It could have been significantly better. But thanks to the $7,500 federal rebate, it's going to be cost-effective. And apparently it's a bigger, heavier car than the Prius. So people that want a little more space or a little better handling size, they'll get it there if they want to make that choice. But so good for GM.
That's exciting technology.
And then
that's where we need to be.
In the same article, they mentioned that Chrysler announced the very next day that it'll hire 1,000 engineers and technicians by early next year. Now it doesn't say where, whether it's in Michigan or not, but they're going to work on this next generation of small and mid-sized cars. So they didn't directly say they're going to commit them to electric and hybrid like GM did. I think they have to. I think they need to. GM has already invested in, says in the article, $700 million in 8 facilities in Michigan to support the Volt. And in fact, you know, in Michigan, we have the first major automaker to build a battery-making facility. And that's, they're making batteries for the Volt here in Michigan.
Well, it seemed like Jennifer Granholm was really pushing. That was her, her thing, to get batteries manufactured here.
Yeah, I found out by reading is that, sure, they're making batteries like crazy in China. Lithium batteries are what they're talking about. And now there's even better battery that's in the iPhone 4 called lithium polyester. You know,
is polyester
if you
really
like
better?
If you like the look of polyester, these batteries are fantastic. I don't know how that, but it's super better, you know, more charge, longer lived.
They
and
need
all
a
that.
Different name, though.
Yeah. But anyway, but people say, oh, you know, there's not much lithium in the world. Well, lithium is recyclable, so you don't have to worry about lithium deposits only coming from like China or South America. And the cost, though, of shipping the batteries from China to the U.S. is astronomical. So we can make batteries right here in the U.S.
Something in our favor.
And we can work on that technology. It is totally cost effective. It's not like, well, we can make the batteries cheaper in China and just import them. No, you can't. Not with batteries. Why? Because batteries are heavy. So shipping is based on weight.
Right.
So we're not talking about feather dusters here or Barbie dolls or something that come from China. We're just talking about heavy-duty batteries, heavyweight batteries. And so this book, Jolt, is great. Just Google it, J-O-L-T, exclamation mark, wherever you might want to buy it. If you decide to shop on Amazon, remember to go to our link at whfr.fm. Click on lower left-hand corner, scroll down, click on just amazon.com there, and WHFR, great holiday present for us, we'll get anywhere from 2 to 5%, depending on what you purchase, of your purchase. You don't have to do anything. You know, don't have to keep in mind a promotion code or anything. Just click on the link. Amazon will remember that's where you came from, and we'll get the credit. So keep in mind,
two gifts
at the holidays, the neediest, including your favorite non-commercial local radio station. Yes. Okay. So moving on to other stories here, and we have only 7 minutes, and Highway 61 with Roger's coming right up. I think you can hear me out there in Studio J. He's nodding, so we know you're there, Roger. We're going to, let's see. I promise winter driving tips, and we can do those in 2 minutes. What the heck? Or we already did them a little bit, but
common sense covers a lot. Well,
I would recommend, and you can look it up, in the Dearborn Times Herald from this week on page 3A, an educator who's been working at the Dearborn Heights Montessori Center, one of the great private school educational philosophies of the 20th century, and now into the 21st. This woman, her name is Neff. She's been teaching Montessori for 40 years, and she has great suggestions on Christmas gifts, holiday gifts that are educational for the kids, as well as environmentally sound. So we recommend that to you. Don't have time to go into that right now. I want to commend the Dearborn Public Schools. They just got a $100,000 federal grant. Thank you, federal government. Which was received for teaching classes in citizenship in order to take the test, maybe, to become a citizen.
Okay.
And English as a second language.
All right.
Now, obviously, in that grant, they had to indicate how many people in the area needed such classes. And because we still have a large immigrant population, even though majority of our so-called immigrants to this area came 15, 20 years ago, their families... still have need of taking these kinds of classes. So the Dearborn Public Schools will be using that money to pay for teachers and set up programs to help other people in the community. And that's great. I wanted to mention, and I don't know what people think of this, and it actually hasn't been a story in the paper, but I got an email from Access, which formerly was the acronym stood for the Arab Community Center for Economic and Social Services. Okay. I don't think it stands for that anymore because the email 2 weeks ago to me said, we've changed.
Hmm.
I'm thinking, how do you change? They now see themselves as a national organization.
All right.
Not local. And they have all kinds of partnerships, and they say, we are the number one Arab organization for the whole United States, and probably one of the biggest because they started out helping a large Arab American or American Arab population right here in this area. I just don't know what that's going to mean for the future. I wonder what Ishmael Ahmed thinks about this. It just there was no press release, but they sent it out as emails to all their supporters and interested people. We've changed. So I don't even think they're using the acronym anymore because they see themselves as a providing all kinds of services all over the U.S.
Huh.
Now, well, if you can do it, great. We need more services. Speaking also of something being done by groups that are identified as Arab American or American Arab, Dearborn Heights in Hines Park is going to get, and I don't know if anything's going to be left of Hines Park, a new rec center, recreational center. Hype Athletics, remember we had a gentleman on who was running for consul? He's the head of Hype Athletics, sort of intramural athletic program for kids in Dearborn. Okay. I think it's Zamar International, which are into social services and welfare for people that need food and shelter and things. And another group are all coming together in Hines Park. And so that's good for them. Now, this is not clearly a Muslim group for our listeners that might get bent out of shape here, because we did talk about a Muslim based community center in West Dearborn. They bought a city block, but it hasn't been identified exactly what the construction is going to be.
But that
is more, in fact, it's going to be called Sharia Law nonprofit to aid and assist in the implementing of Sharia law among those people who believe in that part, that kind of Islam. Okay, anyway. Oh, that was fun. All right. Medical Center, yes, moving ahead in Dearborn, January 3rd. They're going to open the doors. They're going to cut the ribbons on the 15th of this month. And they say 500 jobs. Remember, folks, 300 are already in the area. They're just moving over there. So it's not really 500 new jobs, okay? And I don't think all of them are going to happen in January 1st. So if you read the small print there, eventually, another 5 years, they're going to phase in some more new things. So we'll see what happens there. A great article that Amy pointed out that we don't have time for either. Michigan State University professors of telecommunication, yay, telecom, they have released a documentary. I don't know if it's a feature or what. Critical of Detroit media coverage of the FBI shooting of a... Imam, yes, in Dearborn, which finally the police were found not guilty of anything inappropriate, that they were provoked or whatever. Wayne State University, as is in the Press and Guide from Wednesday, has taken away an award to Helen Thomas. Again, she's the first Arab-American or American-Arab journalist, beginning her career back in 1950, and just recently retired. Because there was a little to-do about how she felt about Israel, that she said off the cuff, And I don't think it was anything even inappropriate or wrong, but it seemed like she was bigoted against Israel. And so she's, even though she just got an Access Award and spoke at an Access banquet here in Dearborn, Wayne State was going to give her award, or has already given her award, and they took it away. That's just not right, folks. She's been a great journalist for years and years and years. It's just not right. Oh, well. Dearborn Animal Shelter and a local charter school, an academy, is going to create a new educational program to help train people to work in animal shelters, to become veterinarians. And this is a K-12 program, but there's going to be a hands-on, if you will, hands-on the pets relationship with Dearborn Animal Shelter, sort of a co-op thing. Also bringing to your attention, we don't have time for it, maybe we'll talk about it next week, Suzanne Serini did write a letter to the editor on Wednesday, Dearborn Council person, talking about Morris Goodman's editorial, referring to malicious campaign tactics as if she did them. And so she responded to that. So it's very interesting. Read the letter. Amy's going to read it now, too.
I am.
We'll try to pull that back up. Because we talked about that in regard to criticism she made of George Durrani for unfair campaign tactics, although didn't sue. Remember, the consul was embroiled in the suit between Ted Tefalsky and in 2009 in his campaign, and that maybe David Bozzi did something. Well, that's in the courts.
Okay.
Or will shortly be in the courts. But Suzanne Serini was criticized by Goodman, and she's trying to say she didn't do anything malicious. We'll find out. Yeah. We got to go. Thank you very much, Amy Powers, WHWR News Director. One more show before Christmas. We're taking the 24th off, and there'll be special WHFR winter season celebration programming on the 24th and 25th. All of both those days, and we're going to be so next week is our Christmas show, so there you go.
Okay.
This was our Winter Wonderland show,
our pre-Christmas show. Yeah.
And so maybe we'll read the letter to Virginia, the editorial response to Virginia next week. I always love that, even though it's 120 years old. That's it for
it
now.
It never gets old.
No. At WHFR, we never get old because
no, let's hope not.
Something new all the time.
Dorian Gray, something.
Mm-mm. WHFR Dearborn, that's the station to which you're listening, the station making waves. Stay tuned for Highway 61 with Roger.